Hey guys, and welcome to episode 16 of the Aspiring Polymath. I'm here with Tony once more. Yes, it's Tony again.
Yes, sir.
And our special guest for today, Risa, also known as Risa the Superhost. Is that's your IG handle, right? So yep. Tony, well, Tony, you're not the special guest today, so I'll let Risa introduce herself first, and then Tony can do his usual intro. We'll get right into it.
Okay. Well, yes. My name is Risa the Superhost on IG. I'm an Airbnb arbitrage business coach. So I specialize in teaching people how to get into the Airbnb industry without owning property. I take them through an 8-week step-by-step program to get them from starting a business all the way to hosting their first property on Airbnb. Been doing it for about a year and I love it.
Nice.
Okay. Tony, you can do your little
It's my turn. It's Tony, four-time guest.
Is it four? And, I thought it was more than four.
I think it's four now. I don't know. I've lost count. But yeah, I'm recurring guest on the show, and it's good to be back. Chief of Lagos on Instagram, nightlife entrepreneur, daytime accountant, and yes, I'm here today to learn. I'm not talking too much today. I came to learn how to start my Airbnb business from the ground up, and hopefully be richer than Kennedy someday. But yeah, let's do this.
We'll get you together.
All right, so I'll ask the obvious question, or at least what seems to me to be the obvious question. How did you get started with Airbnb? What's your supervillain origin story?
A supervillain origin story. Well, I started my business during the pandemic, like a lot of us probably did. My company had recently given us kind of the dismissal for us all to start working from home. And from that point on, I just felt kind of a shift in my job security. And I felt like I needed to be doing something. I needed to be making some plans outside of my job income, just in case. I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but I knew I needed a plan B just in case things fell through with my job. And I had been working as a secretary for over 10 years at that point. So my company had been bought a couple of times from larger companies. And so we were all kind of just waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I started my business in December 2020. I knew I wanted to do something in real estate, but I didn't have any experience at all with real estate beyond just like YouTube University. And I heard a podcast actually with Alexia Wright on Earn Your Leisure. And she was describing her arbitrage business, which basically she rents apartments and puts them on Airbnb with permission. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. So I was like, oh yeah, this is right up my alley. Getting to kind of play in real estate without having to own real estate and being able to get started right away and decorate cute places and make money on top of that. Like I was sold. So I started buying courses. It took me from the time I started my LLC in December 2020, it took me until June of 2021 to actually find a unit and get it up and running. So that whole 6-month process was just diving into content and like overthinking it and just doing the most. But finally got up and running, and I decided to start talking about my journey on Instagram. And so I was just sharing, you know, like the behind the scenes, before and after, decorating the place. I started to get interest, and people were DMing me about, well, did you coach? Can you mentor me? Can you help me? And I didn't really know what to do with that at the time. But my first unit was a success. And then I went and started looking for my second property, and I found an investor. I was in a Facebook group with a lot of investors, and I found one to partner with, and he actually has a he's a wholesaler coach. And so he had a following online, and he basically hired me to teach a masterclass to his audience. And his audience is like 70,000 people. And I was, I was like, okay. and he said that in exchange for me doing this 3-day live masterclass, I could pitch my services at the end of day 3. At the time, I didn't have any services to offer. I didn't know what that meant. And he said, well, just put together, you know, a mentorship program, like a one-on-one coaching package or whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I just put together something. I didn't know what I was doing. Didn't think anybody was going to even buy it. But I pitched it at the end of the third day of the first masterclass. And I had like 8 people that wanted to sign on with me. So I quickly had to develop a system for like getting everybody in and like doing things kind of, you know, in a system. So that turned into my first round of mentees. And every 2 months since then, it's been like clockwork. I have like 5 or 6 people that I bring on for about 8 weeks. We work together. And the special thing about my program is that I guarantee that we're going to find you a unit. I think that that's probably the number one sticking point with a lot of aspiring Airbnb entrepreneurs in this space. It's difficult to get landlords to want to lend you their property for you to use it as an investment. So there's a degree of finesse that you got to have and confidence in speaking with, you know, landlords and apartment complexes that I think it trips a lot of people up. So I intentionally added that to my program as a guarantee because I want to make sure that people actually start doing the thing and not just spending months and months of learning like I did.
Yeah.
So, in a nutshell, sorry. I was,
No. That was great. That was great.
That was really good.
I just thought of like 3 Instagram reels to make out of everything you just
said. Because content is like my weakness. I tell you what.
Yeah, that was really good. And I think that's the sticking point for your program, the special sauce, let me say, because it's all well and good if you learn all this stuff, I actually started consuming short-term rental content on Airbnb Automated, I think it was probably like November 2019, about this time in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I was consuming and I had consumed so much content on it, it felt like I got a bachelor's degree or something. But there was nowhere to use it. I love
Airbnb Automated, by the way. Yeah. That's a good channel.
Yeah, lots of good info, but there was nowhere to use it. Like at some point I was like, okay, I need to quit watching the videos and actually find a way to use this stuff. Cause there's no point. Like Sean has hundreds of videos. There's no end to watching the videos, but if you don't have a place to use it, it's worthless. It's almost worthless information. And you can't mentor somebody or teach somebody how to manage Airbnbs when you've never managed an Airbnb. So it's, I think that's the most important aspect of it. And I think sometimes people underestimate the power of just going out and trying, just go out and start. I remember after watching Sean's videos, in one of his videos, he mentioned a building in Dallas. I'll just say Digit 1919. He mentioned that,
Digit 1919. Yeah.
He mentioned one of his videos, like I'd been looking for clues, watching his videos meticulously for clues. And one day he dropped one and I was like, yes. And I went there literally like 3 days after watching his videos on pitching and everything. Uh-huh. And I went there in the office and I tried it and they're like, no, we don't do that.
No.
And after that, I was just like, screw this short-term rental thing.
Not at all? They said they don't do it at all.
No, they were like, no, they don't. So before I went in, I had gone on Google and then looked at the reviews. And I saw a lot of residents were leaving bad reviews saying, hey, there's Airbnbs here. People party all night, blah, blah, blah. The management doesn't do anything about it. So that for me confirmed, okay, so there were Airbnbs here. And then I was looking under that and the management was coming in and commenting that, oh no, that's not a thing anymore. There's new management, blah, blah, blah. So I was already going in a little bit cautious because I didn't know was it true? Was there still Airbnbs or what happened? So, right. But after that, no, that kind of, you know, that kind of crushed me a little bit. I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'll just go look at actually doing this with property that I own. And I think that was what kind of sent me down the townhouse, the mm-hmm. route of buying a townhouse and all that. And then, going down that route, I already knew all this from Sean's videos. He said all this already, why he thought that arbitrage is the better way to go. Less risk, the tenants, the having to fix broken stuff in the house, like line by line, everything he said, I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
One after the other.
Okay. So, sorry, just for context, you decided to own your place instead of.
Yeah. So when I first started, I did it with a place I owned, but it was like a house hacking thing. So, okay. For context, since you're not in the US, you can get a property with an FHA loan, but you're supposed to live in it for a year. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I did. And I had long-term tenants for that year, partly, and then decided to go in and start Airbnb. But during that 1 year, I already learned some lessons. And then when I started Airbnb, wouldn't you know it, that's when the air conditioning unit in the house would go bad. In July, the middle of the summer, the hottest month in Texas.
In Texas.
The AC unit had to be replaced. There's a warranty that covers fixes like that on the house, except it only covers fixes that are over $6,000. How much is it going to cost to replace the AC unit? About $5,800.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So after that barrage of lessons, I decided, okay. I knew Sean was right, but now I really understood that Sean was right, and that's why I decided to go the other route. But yeah, but I would definitely say, like, I won't say there's no substitute, but it's very good to go out there and try stuff and learn for yourself, see what works, what doesn't work. I mean, obviously with measured risk taking, you don't want to, you know, blow up your entire life trying things, but definitely want to try things. Let me stop talking so this civilian can ask a couple questions.
No, thank you for giving the civilian a chance. And I'm sure many people that are new to Airbnb will probably have the same questions I'm about to ask in my head, but I already have a few off the bat. Before I go into them, though, like, one thing I wanted to point out from, like, the monologue you guys just went on is that, like, analysis paralysis is a real thing. Like, you can be stuck on, like, and I experienced it in every new venture I've started, like, business. Now I'm a content creator. Like, I know how much YouTube videos I watched on how to start a YouTube channel before I went out. Nothing can ever replace the process of actually going out and trying stuff. So I'm glad to see that you guys actually, even though in Kennedy's case, it was a big no at the beginning. But but the first question I was going to ask, though, like, based on what you guys have said so far, is how does this business of, like, Airbnb arbitrage actually work? Like, so how does it work? That's the first question. Mm-hmm. And but how much capital do you need to, like, get, like, stats off the bat? Those are the first two questions that come to mind.
Okay, so I'll start with one at a time. So how it actually works is very similar to just renting a property in your personal name. It's just a couple of slight tweaks. First of all, it's recommended that you have an LLC or a business established first. It's just easier to manage this kind of business, especially in the long term, if you're planning on acquiring multiple properties, which I think everybody's goal is to have more than one property. So it's best to go for a corporate lease, which you'll need a business in order to do that. So step number one, start a business, whether that's an LLC, S Corp, C Corp. I'm not an attorney, but just regular run-of-the-mill LLC will be just fine. Start a business. And then you need to obviously put that business together online in a way that will be enticing for a potential landlord if they stumbled on your website, if you have any marketing materials, like your business looks legit and professional online if they were to poke around on you. So that's step number two, set yourself up online, take your business seriously, get a real business address, get a real business phone number, have everything separate from your personal information.
Okay.
And step number three is you start reaching out to landlords just as if you were looking for a place for yourself. If you were looking for a place for yourself, where might you go? You would go to probably Zillow, Redfin, Apartments.com, HotPads, whatever. You're going to look up places. You're going to put in the criteria that you want. Okay, I only want to see 2-bedroom townhomes in Tampa, right? You're going to look at those same properties just as if you were going to live there. And then when you go to reach out, you're just going to tweak your message just a tiny bit so that the landlord on the other side of the message is aware that you're not a typical tenant. So I don't mean run down a whole like fancy schmancy pitch, but say just enough that they want to know more. And so an example of that would be, hi, Jimmy, this townhouse is beautiful. I think it would work really, really well as a furnished short-term rental. That's what I do. If you're open to something like this, if this is worth a chat, here's my number. Boom. That's it. And then either way, have an awesome day. That's the extent of what I'm telling to people. And,
that's,
you know,
freaking.
For every 10 messages, there's one that will say, more. What? Show me more. Tell me more. Give me some information. Send me an email. Let's hop on the phone. Let's talk about it. And more often than not, that phone call turns into a deal because they have spoken to me. I'm able to share, you know, some property pictures of my current properties. Now, obviously, I already have properties, so it's easier to get the next landlord when you already have the concept. In the beginning, it is very difficult as a new person with no current property, no current landlord partners. It can be difficult to get that trust. And that's why your profile online needs to be so strong. Your website should say it for you. Your marketing materials should say it for you. They should be willing to give you a shot based on the promises that you're making them. But that's really how it works. You reach out to people. Wherever you would find a place at, Zillow, whatever. Once you get somebody to say yes, you sign their lease just like you would normally, but you would want to add an additional document. It's a lease addendum that basically is like an owner acknowledgement of what you're doing. It's an acknowledgement that says, I'm coming into this lease not as a typical tenant. I won't be living on the property. I'll be using it as a guest rental. And you, Mr. Owner, you're okay with that. It's just a one-page document that I use in all of my deals. And it's just, you know, let's get it in writing. You've said that you're okay with it, but let's get it in writing just in case. And this stuff does come back to bite you if you don't do this. So that will be the only like major sticking difference between a typical lease situation and a corporate lease situation. You'll want to have this document in place. And then once that's all said and done, you've paid your money, you've paid your deposit, you're moving in, you furnish it just as you would if you were moving in. Obviously, there's going to be some differences in furnishing an Airbnb, but once you get it furnished, then it's yours to list. And Airbnb does not have a requirement that you have to own the property. So as long as you live there, technically through your lease, you are allowed to list that on the platform and start making money off of it.
Okay. Seems very straightforward.
It really is. It really is. And so, then as far as like starting budget, when I started mine before inflation hit, my budget was $5,000 for a 1-bedroom. Of course I went way over that because I was new. I didn't know what I was doing. I ended up spending close to $7,000. To furnish a 1-bedroom. So that's about normal, especially now with inflation, everything's more expensive.
And that was for a lease term of how long?
That's for a 1-year lease.
1-year lease. Wow. That's not bad at all.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you have to think about your first month rent, your deposit, and then all the furniture and everything. So it really is going to depend on the market. It's going to depend on the place that you get.
Okay.
And you'll want to do some research ahead of time to make sure that the potential of that place on Airbnb is going to cover those expenses for you. So there is some math involved as well. You can't just get any apartment and think that it's going to be a money shower when you put on Airbnb, because if you're in a competitive area, you may experience some oversaturation there. So it's important to do your research first. But yeah, it's the barrier is very low to get in this way. And I think that's why it's catching on the way that it has, because most everyone knows how to rent an apartment. Everybody's not at the level where they can just snatch up a house and buy a house for this. Yeah. But pretty much everyone middle class is able to afford a place, a rental place. So
wow,
it's exciting.
And addictive. Sounds exciting. And addictive.
It is very addictive. It is. Well, I found him in Cincinnati, and like within 2 months, he wanted another place. He was in Florida.
Can you explain the addiction?
There is no better feeling than when you see that email that says your payout has been sent.
Yeah. It's nice.
There's no better feeling than that. It's an addicting feeling.
Yeah.
One question that came to mind again, can you list on other platforms apart from Airbnb?
Yes. Yeah, you should. You absolutely should.
Damn.
Yeah.
So you can list on several platforms.
One mistake that a lot of hosts make, especially new hosts, that a lot of hosts just get on Airbnb and they just wait.
Because personally, I don't use Airbnb. Personally, as a consumer of like short lets. I use a lot of shortlets. So
called short-term rentals in Europe and
sorry for my YouTube.
So kind of like sublet, but shortlet.
No, like how do I explain it?
Shortlet basically just means you're leasing the place before a short amount of time. It's basically like a short-term rental. That's essentially what it is. Yeah,
like I'm staying for like a day or two or three in a place. And like usually I use like bookings.com, hotels. I don't use Airbnb. So you're telling me you can list on these other platforms too.
You should definitely be. I mean, booking.com, some people will say stay away from it because the guests tend to be worse. But when you list on booking.com, your occupancy rate just shoots through the roof. So it's a trade-off. It's, you know, what are you willing to kind of deal with on the back of that? Because if you're having trouble getting booked, you know, spreading yourself around different platforms always helps. More eyeballs you can get on your listing, the better. So I would never want someone to have all their eggs in the Airbnb basket, because God forbid Airbnb website crash tonight, there goes all your money with it. Yeah. So you want to be on multiple platforms for sure.
Yeah. I personally have stayed away from bookings because I've heard something similar. And beyond that, there's some that I didn't really mind. I felt like I could kind of filter for that with price. Yeah. But there was something I heard about restrictions. I forget what it is. And it was much earlier this year. Apparently there's some restrictions you can put for maybe minimum number of days or something like that on Airbnb and Vrbo, that at least when you're going from Vrbo to their Expedia integration and bookings.com, it doesn't get transferred over, and people are able to make bookings that you may not have accepted or you may not have wanted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But besides that, some hosts, especially during the pandemic, a lot of hosts started going towards making their own direct sites for people to book and trying to take their traffic away from Airbnb because of some instances that happened that they didn't really appreciate with Airbnb. Yeah. But speaking of the budget too, the starting budget, I want to say that varies a lot. Like Risa was saying, her first apartment, she budgeted about $5,000 and spent closer to $7,000. But for example, the unit she found me in Florida in Titusville, I didn't even have to furnish the place. So, Yeah, so the landlord already had furniture there. And I essentially just had to pay first month's rent and deposit. So it's like $4,000 to get started, which is the first month's rent. And the deposit was, first month rent was like $1,600. Deposit was $2,400. And that was it to get started. Just bought some supplies and all that and got started. So it all depends on the deal that you're able to make. Each deal is, in a way, unique and different from all the others. But speaking of, there's a question that just came to mind. So very often I would hear Sean say something like, when you're negotiating with a landlord, just so you have some flexibility to get started and all that, try to negotiate getting, I can't remember if it was 2 weeks or the first month free or something like that. Try to negotiate getting 2 weeks free or something so you have time to set up and all that. Have you ever tried to negotiate that? Has it ever worked?
Yes. I have tried that. I have not been successful with that yet because that's just in my nature. A lot of it depends on your mindset. And I know that people get tired of hearing that, but it's true. If you approach the potential deal like you're soliciting them or like you're asking them to do you a favor, it's going to be difficult to negotiate for concessions. Now, obviously, Sean has like 120 arbitrage properties, so he's pretty confident. He's got this system, and he's probably taking multiple units at
exactly.
once. That's probably something he might have left out. When you're asking for multiple units, it's a lot easier to make those kind of deals and say, hey, well, let's just do half of the deposit or let's do, 3 weeks free or whatever. They're happy to give those concessions because you're doing them a solid favor by taking care of their occupancy. Right.
Occupancy.
So, the bigger you get, the further along your journey, it's going to be easier to do that. But I don't think that newbies should really be focused on trying to get that right. Like, let's get confident with just getting a deal first. And then once you have a couple under your belt, it's going to be a lot more natural and easier to negotiate those kind of things. That's more of an advanced game, but it happens all the time. Definitely. It really depends on how motivated that landlord is.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I always figured, and I think he might have even mentioned, just been a while since I saw the video, like a lot of the things he talks about he tries to give game to newbies as well, but a lot of the strategies that he mentions on how to negotiate deals, how to pay cleaners, a lot of that stuff is really only useful to people who've gotten at least maybe 4 or 5 units and are trying to scale beyond that and build their business beyond that. Most people or beginners can't really use that information much. But it's still great info
I agree that all of his information is not necessarily newbie friendly, but I actually appreciate that because there's a ton of newbie game everywhere. And so I kind of appreciate that he speaks to the people who are a little bit further along and maybe struggling to build systems. Because that's necessary too. We need to know that stuff too. What comes next? What do I do after the second or third? I'm starting to get overwhelmed. How do I systematize this? So he also has content for that. So I think it's important to continue to learn, as you move through, because just because you have 3 units or 4 units doesn't make you an expert on anything. You could be struggling and like pulled in a million different directions if you don't have the right systems in place. So, getting into the game is one thing, but you still have to learn every step that you go. So always be learning. That's one of my mottos. Learning.
So what's the name of this guy's YouTube channel that you guys keep talking about?
So it used to be called Airbnb Automated.
Is it not anymore?
It was brought to my attention recently that he changed the name. I think he changed it. His name is Sean Rakicic. I know you're not going to be able to spell Rocky Change.
No,
exactly.
If you, I don't know if maybe it's because I'm already.
I think it's just his name now.
Yeah, it's just his name. So if I search Airbnb automated, it still comes up for me. But I think it's because I'm already a subscriber. So it's just
what's the name?
Sean Rocky Jeech is S-E-A-N Rocky Jeech is R-A-K-I-D-Z-I-C-H.
Mm-hmm.
Z-I-C-H. Very,
yeah, very difficult Polish name to spell.
Yeah. God damn.
But yeah, he has a lot of great stuff.
To follow him.
Okay, okay. Next question I have is like, so for the strategy to get customers in terms of you've agreed a lease agreement with the landlord, like how do you start bringing in customers? Do you just allow the Airbnb to do its thing, find customers for you, or are there steps you can do to like bring more customers to your Airbnb?
Oh yeah, for sure. So in the beginning, yes, you're relying a lot on Airbnb to bring the traffic, which they do. They do a good job of welcoming new hosts to the platform. Mm-hmm. So as a new host in the like the first like 30 days, they will give you a boost. So like Airbnb has a whole algorithm, just like Instagram has an algorithm. And in the beginning, new hosts enjoy this artificial like boost to the top of the listing. So for instance, if you were to look on Airbnb right now for a place in any city, you would see really amazing listings that are like super hosts with tons of reviews. And then a couple in there that are just like rando looking, no reviews, like super regular, degular. Those are the new hosts. Okay. They're brand new and Airbnb is sticking them there to help them get those first couple of bookings. Okay. So they're helping them out. The problem with that is that new hosts don't realize that's artificial and it's very temporary. So they list on the platform. I know you've seen this. They list on the platform. They get booked right away. They get like 3-4 bookings right away. And they're like, it's working. Like, you know, and after 30 days, if you haven't gone back and completely, you know, done your listing to the best of your ability and ticked every box and put tons of pictures on it, you're going to drop to the bottom of the algorithm after that first
one.
And a lot of people experience that shift and they don't understand what happened. And so that's another thing that I like to drive home as, you know, myself and my mentees, as we're building up the listing, it's important that that listing is 100% complete, that you complete it on a computer. Every single question that they ask, there should be a check mark, there should be an X, you know, answer every single question, caption every single picture. You should have at least 20 pictures to begin with, you know, really try to stuff keywords anywhere that you can. You want that listing to be as robust as possible so that when your artificial boost runs out, you're not immediately at the bottom of the pack. You've built up a little bit of interest. You've gotten some inquiries. Hopefully by then you've gotten some reviews as well. And you're still going to experience a difference. There's always going to be that lull after that first like crazy month. It's like a rite of passage. Everybody goes through it. But it doesn't have to be as severe if you've done what you needed to do. And at that point, when you do experience that slow down on Airbnb, that's the perfect time to get started on Vrbo or booking.com or whatever other platform you're planning on being on. That's the time you want to do it so that you're not sitting there watching your Airbnb like watching a pot boil, which a lot of people end up doing. So,
To add to that, I will say that can be very, that boost can be very dramatic.
And it's very dramatic. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That first property in Cincinnati, when I put that on Airbnb, like I didn't actually go to Cincinnati. So I had to order furniture and all the stuff that was in the apartment. I ordered on Amazon. So when we actually created the listing, took pictures and put on Airbnb, there was absolutely nothing in the apartment. It was an empty one-bedroom apartment, and people still booked it. Yeah. I still got two or three bookings before the apartment was even furnished. Like, that's how dramatic the booking. That's how dramatic the boost. I mean, granted, that property is in a great location, but still, I was shocked that people actually booked an empty apartment.
Did they see pictures of the empty place though?
Yeah, it was empty. Like the lights in the kitchen hanging from the top were still covered in bags and stuff. Like it was very empty in every sense of the word. There wasn't no couch, no bed, no nothing.
Yep.
Wow. It was very empty, and people still booked it.
Yeah, somebody booked my first apartment empty, and it was just empty pictures that off of the website.
What did you guys do in those scenarios? Did you quickly furnish the place, or did you just cancel the book?
Yeah. So the furniture was already, it was already on the way. I'd ordered it already. It was because I ordered everything on Amazon, and I had Nikita helping to set up the unit, so all that stuff was already on the way, and it got set up. It was about 90-95% ready when the first guest came in. The only thing that was missing were some blinds came in the wrong size, so I had to reorder them, and that was the only thing missing when the first guest came. And they were like, oh yeah, the place was great, except there are no blinds.
Yeah,
and they left like a 4-star review. But I was like, damn. Okay.
Oh, that's so whack.
Damn. But sometimes people overthink stuff like that. Like, how am I gonna get it?
They don't want to just do 5 stars across the board. They just want to dock one just to be authentic, but they don't realize how much that hurts you. Like, that's terrible.
I used to be that person. That's why I don't really get mad, because I used to be that person before I became a host.
Yeah, they don't
understand.
I didn't understand how much
it affected both on Airbnb and Uber too. When I had a short stint where for a couple months I drove for Uber, and I kind of got the same experience. Like, oh, I still have a 5-star rating on Uber. Mm-hmm. I only did like 30 trips, but I always got 5 stars somehow. I guess, I don't know.
I'm guessing you're quiet throughout the trip.
No, I mean, Uber is kind of similar to Airbnb in some ways. Like, some guests, some riders will try to initiate conversation, and then I will talk to them. Some, you try to talk to them and they just straight up ignore you, and you know that's your cue to shut up and just drive. But yeah, it's. You can't overthink stuff sometimes. That goes to the theme of you just have to start doing. Like, even when we put that apartment up, I think it was Risa's idea to put it up empty, and I was still thinking, really? Can we really put it empty? She was like, yeah, just do it. And I knew that from experience.
I had 6 weeks booking. I had a family from Hawaii book my Atlanta apartment for 6 weeks from empty pictures. And part of their inquiry was, oh, so by the time we get there, there's going to be a couch, right? And there's going to be a bed, right? I'm like, yeah, of course, it's going to be bed furnished. And then they were just like, okay, well, just, you know, hit me up whenever you have the pictures up and we'll come back and check them out. But they had already booked. They had paid the money. Like, they were reserved.
People are brave.
Yeah, they're very brave. I'm like, I don't know that I would do that personally.
I wouldn't do that.
Because who knows what that furniture is going to be like. I could have an air mattress in there for y'all. Like, you know,
I would book a place to have at least 100 reviews.
Yeah, that's a little extent. I mean, I'll take a handful of reviews at
100
least.
100 is a lot.
But
I'm joking. But
yeah,
the more reviews, the better,
of course. But yeah, people are bold. And I think that's part of the boost, because not only does Airbnb move you to the top of the results, but they also offer a new host promo. So if somebody books a new host listing, they'll get 20% off of that booking. So that's a big incentive for a lot of travelers to stick their neck out and take a chance on you. And that's the reason why people are getting bookings, you know, easily in the beginning. Airbnb really, that's probably the only period of time that you can count Airbnb as your friend. After that 30 days, they are no longer your friends. Okay. They are a business at the end of the day, and they only get money when you're booked. So that's what they care about. And so in the beginning you feel really cared for, but it's very short lived. So don't get it twisted.
Okay. I have a lighthearted question now to ask you guys because I'm already having information overload.
No worry, you can listen to it as many times as you want.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
I know I found her. Yeah, I found her page on Instagram. I don't remember how I found her page on Instagram. So there are a lot of these Airbnb pages on Instagram. I think somebody told me about this guy that had an Airbnb page. I don't know his full name.
Yeah.
Somebody told me about him, and I added him and joined his community. And they had a lot of good info and talking about deals that they had done. But you know, I wanted like the deals like now, today.
Right.
So I was still looking for more stuff, and I think I came across some other pages. So I saw her page, and I followed her page. And I basically stalked her page for a couple months, just looking at what she was posting. Because there's a lot of people that post stuff in Airbnb, and you know they're saying all this stuff, but it just sounds like fluff. It just sounds like I don't even know if I can trust this person. It sounds like fluff. So I basically stalked her page long enough for me to decide, like, okay, I think I've seen enough for me to take a leap of faith. And that was when I contacted her, and she told me about I saw the mentorship stuff when you're. On your story, I think you told me then you had just finished the first group, I think, or the group before, and that was kind of how I found her. So it wasn't any elaborate thing. I mean, it's the same Instagram that we all use to watch videos every day.
Wow, and you guys connected from there. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And to this day, you know, as I'm getting deals, I know that Kennedy, you're still in growth phase and you're still looking for properties. So I always keep you in mind if I see a deal in the areas that I know that you would like. But yeah, now we're up to two for you, and hopefully it's going to be more from there. You know, you've been an excellent tenant on the deals that we've done. The landlords love you. You pay your rent. Like you're doing it. Like I honestly think, Kennedy, you might be one of my most successful former students. Just you know.
Come on.
No, I'll take it.
That's what we like to hear. Inspired, you know, I'm inspired.
Even on like just regular phone calls when we're just talking, like I get game from you. I can tell that you're studying. I can tell that you're, you know, learning new tricks and strategies, and you've got systems in place and you're using these third party apps and things to help optimize your operations. So you're doing the damn thing. Like you're doing it. Like this is exactly what I want, you know, all of my students to do. Not just get on Airbnb and just sit and wait and wonder why it's not hitting. You know what I mean? Like you gotta have some kind of go get them in you. Like this is the thing that I like to remind my mentees is, you know, when you get on Airbnb, that is your debut. That's not the end. You know what I mean? That's not your finale. This is, you're just getting started. Like that's day one. Consider that day one of your real education. When you're on the platform and you're actually having to make the rent and make your expenses and you're playing with real money now, like we're not playing around no more. Now it's time to learn and really optimize your operations to the point that you can make as much profit as you can. This is a business, just like anything else. And you can't just throw it up there and think that it's going to do the work for you. You have to do the work.
So, yeah. I think people don't think about that aspect enough. That part you just said, because that's part of the reason why I'm still at two, because I wanted to make sure that I'm balanced. Everything is self-sufficient before I go and get three and four. I think it was particularly the Cincinnati one. The Titusville one. I was taking my time to really understand what was going on, down there. And it's that place. I could give a whole episode on it on Titusville. I just got a new, well, not just there's a new co-host now for like a couple the past 1 month or so. I don't know if I told you. I had to change from Whitney.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there's, Titusville could have its own episode, but anyways, I needed to balance everything there, make sure that it's self-sufficient. And now, like, from now, I'm booked there from now till the end of March, practically. So
nice.
So
Good for you.
I know there's a market there. Yeah. And I want to keep adding to it. So what I'm trying to say is, like, if you go out there and you just rush in without knowing what you're doing, even if somebody told you, like, hey, you have the capital, hey, I can get you 4 units this week, and you don't know what you're doing, you could end up finding yourself paying $7,000 out of your pocket rent because you messed up. You messed up what you're supposed to be doing. Exactly. You know, so you have to make sure you know what you're doing, and the units are actually not just paying for themselves or generating a profit. Like, I have a co-host at each of my units now, so I do have to. The margin has been, you know, dropped a little bit because now I have to pay rent and I have to pay them a percentage too. So my goal, the target I'm trying to meet has to reflect that also. It has to make sense. Otherwise, you know, it's not worth it. And in a way, you have to structure it in what works for your life too. Like, I was one of the first times when I knew I was going to have to replace Whitney is when I was on vacation in Mexico and one of my guests was calling me and I was on the phone trying to sort things out for like an hour with this guest. And I found myself wondering, why do I have a co-host if I'm on vacation and I can't even, it's like 9 p.m. in Mexico and I can't even, you know, so that's another kind of thing. It's not just about the money too. You have to depend on what you're doing with it. You have to maybe balance your let me call it work-life balance, or maybe not even on a regular basis, but at least you should be able to go to vacation and, you know, not answer phone calls. So yeah, that's a big part of what people need to consider as well going into a business. Like, it's like you said, it's in every sense of the word really is a business. And that's really one of the reasons why I like Sean's channel, because Sean is like, he's not playing around. Like, he's really, he treats it as probably because that wasn't his first business. You know, he already understood business before he went into Airbnb and brought some of those systems into it with him. So sometimes I think people look at stuff like Airbnb as an escape from having to do a 9-to-5 or a traditional business. Little do they know that it's as much a business as any other business that they're running away from.
It absolutely is. Yeah, for sure.
Risa, I know about Kennedy's situation. Do you still work a full-time job?
No, actually. So remember how I said I had a job for 10 years and I thought that maybe I should have a plan B? Well, that was really good thinking because they actually did lay me off. And I started my Airbnb June of 2021. I was laid off in August of 2021. So just 2 months later, I got my pay slip. Yeah, it was done. I was done. And not only that, cherry on top of that, I had no severance after 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
can they do that?
Well, I knew that it was coming because I was salary for 8 of those years. And then they switched me to hourly. So that's always a bad sign. That's always a bad sign when you go from salary to hourly. And now I'm clocking in, clocking out. I was like, okay, it's coming. It's coming. It took them a long 2 years to finally crack that hammer, but I knew it was coming. So, no severance, no nothing. Just thanks for your service. And then I had to beg for unemployment. Like, it was a bad time. But because the Airbnb was already up and running, we were getting some payouts. Obviously it wasn't a cash cow at any point, but it was just enough. It was just enough of a cushion throughout the month that, you know, my husband took over the rent on the place and then we lived off of the payouts. And it was just enough to kind of float us. Things were tight, but it was enough. And that was, for me, that was my turning point. Like, okay, this is really an asset here. This is a money-making thing that we've created that is helping support us right now. Like, shit really got real, like, really fast. And it helped so much. And I was able to stay home. You know, we didn't have to send the kids to daycare anymore because I was, you know, not working. So, you know, things just tend to work out when things are aligned. You know what I mean? Like sometimes things happen for a reason. And I don't know that I would have jumped, you know, feet first into Airbnb had I not lost my job. Because at that point, that was around the same time that I was looking for investor partners. And so when I found my potential partner, we hopped on a phone call and I told him, I said, hey, listen, I just lost my job. And this is not, you know, a pity play by any means, but I'm saying that to say I have the time and I'm dedicated because this is all I've got going on right now. And I refuse. At that point, I was disgruntled. So I was like, I refuse to go back to work after this kind of
thing. I love that.
Like, I was like, I love there's that. No way I'm working again. So I'm jumping in. You know, if you want a partner that is going to be dedicated, it's me. And so that's when we decided to go in on a house. And it was just, it's been life changing ever since. So, you know, that wouldn't have happened. I would have still been clocking in, you know what I mean? And still kind of having my little side hustle Airbnb that a little extra money here and there. But I wouldn't have gone this far with it had I been working my 9 to 5. So God just removes things from your life that no longer serve you. So that's, I feel like that's what that was.
There's something to be said about the lack of stability that just makes you like triple your focus on whatever you wanted to do. Like, because I can relate to it. I've not lost my job, but I've quit my job twice, like jobs I've had in the past twice. And last year I quit my job because I started my introduction as a nightlife entrepreneur. So I used to promote clubs in London as a business last year. And then I quit my job managing a club and then when I quit my job, I was like, what do I do now? then I was just like, oh my goodness, how much do I have left? Then I rented out a club. I rented a club with my last savings, and then I went hard, parties every weekend, like hosting club night. I hosted like 6 club nights every weekend. I was like, shit. Like, I didn't even know this was possible to make this my full time like income. So like so during that period, I made enough money to last me like over the next 3-4 months.
That's amazing.
Till I got another job, but at the same time, then when I got another job, then I left the business again. So there's something about like doing a 9 to 5 and like how it makes you so like reduces your drive so much. But I don't know how Kennedy is doing it though. I know Kennedy still has a full time job while still managing to be one of your best students. So
yeah, seriously. I think it's because he's systemizing. He's getting co-hosts to take care of that day-to-day stuff. You know, like I tell my students all the time, like, we're not going through 8 weeks of mentorship for you to just be a host at the end of it. Like, I don't want you getting caught up in the day-to-day talking to guests and, you know, like sending them toilet paper and all that. That's best for you to delegate, either automate it somehow with a messaging app so you can get to it later, or have somebody who is dedicated to your inbox, your guests, so that you don't have to be like, this is a business. Like, you don't have to be every person in your business. Like, and you shouldn't want to be. That's a job. You know what I mean?
You have to have an entrepreneur mindset.
Even though you are paying her a percentage, she's incentivized to help you maximize your profit because that's going to maximize her, what she puts in her pocket too. So you're still benefiting at the end of the day. So I would much rather make a little bit less money and be hands off than to get all the coins, but I'm working myself to the bone. Like, that's backwards. I don't want to do that. So I think that you got the formula right. You know, get a property, get an assistant for that property, make sure it's systematic, make sure it's paying for itself, you know, at least 6 months in a row. And then you move on to the next one because you're in a good position. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you have a very practical way of kind of growing your business. And I think that you're setting yourself up for success in the long run.
Yeah. Okay. I think the caveat to that is that you found the right person, right?
That too.
Yeah, because when I first started in Titusville, like the first 2 months there really made me appreciate Nikita so much more. Like, I already knew like she was doing a good job, but like the contrast was just it was night and day basically. Wow. And that's how you know that you found somebody that's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And man, there's something else I was gonna say, but it just flew out of my head.
Yeah, Nikita's my sister, by the way. I wasn't sure if we made that clear, but Nikita's my sister. She lives in Cincinnati, so she actually lives about 5 minutes away from the Airbnb building. So naturally, I wanted her to be kind of like our boots on the ground whenever we were setting up, because no one is local. Every single investor in that building is not in Cincinnati. So we set all four Airbnbs up completely remotely. Everything was ordered, everything was delivered, and Nikita helped kind of facilitate all that stuff. And so once everybody was set up, she started taking over as kind of like the primary cleaner, and like we added her as a co-host so she could see what was going on. And with, you know, having no actual co-host experience before, I feel like she took to it like a fish to water. And so yeah, you're right, like it's all about the right people. Because everybody's not going to do the same job the same. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's not going to be as hands-on with it. And I think because she's my sister, you know, obviously she's closer to this project emotionally. So she's going to go above and beyond what a typical cleaner or a typical co-host would do. So I think maybe you might be a little spoiled by Nikita. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like it, to be honest. What I was going to say, though, based on that, like, so could you say, like, if someone doesn't have, like, enough capital, or, like, would you say there's a viable route to take as, a co-host, like, to be, like, a co-host on Airbnb? You don't own your own place, but you work with. Okay, so that's a route someone could potentially take.
That's probably the smartest way to get in, because not only are you making money without having to put any money up, but you're getting practice. You're getting really good practice on the platform and on, you know, hospitality and customer service and guest services and, you know, the algorithm and keeping bookings up and all of that. You get real world practice on somebody else's listing. Then by the time you got your coins together for your own, you're an expert. You know what I mean? So that's a great way to get in, is to co-host someone else's property.
This is a very interesting business.
There's a whole market for that too, but let me bring you back to reality a little bit, Tony, because there's a caveat to that, because it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg thing. Because some people, when they're searching for a co-host, they're like, okay, have you managed a property before? Mm-hmm. Okay, let me see it. Because I found this, well, I didn't find him. He found me, actually. He messaged me in Vrbo, almost like he was a guest, but he was like, in the message, he was saying he's not really a guest. He's searching for co-hosts. He wanted to turn some of his long-term properties into, I think I told you about him.
Yeah.
He was a pilot. He's a pilot. He said he owned like 11 long-term properties and he wanted to turn them to Airbnbs, but he was looking for a co-host. So when we met up at Starbucks, we chatted for a while. And one of the things he wanted to know is like, okay, so have you managed an Airbnb? I was like, yeah, I'm doing one now. But that was about my second or third month into managing at the townhouse. And he was like, oh, like, how much are you making? And then I showed him like how it was going and all that. And he seemed satisfied. And he was like, okay. Like, he'd want to probably work with me, but he has a tenant that he basically needed like a month or two to get the tenant out, basically. Mm-hmm. And it was during that time that he had found Vacasa. And he was saying, for him, Vacasa made more sense for him, which I understood. He kind of talked to me about it. It made sense because Vacasa is a company that, basically, if you own property, you can just go to them and list with them, and they'll help you. They'll manage everything for you and take a percentage off. Although in my opinion, it's kind of steep. I think they take like 30% off or something, but they manage everything for you and supposedly maximize your profits.
Yeah.
How much does Airbnb take?
I believe it's 3%.
Thereabouts.
Damn.
It's thereabouts. Yeah, Airbnb takes about So Vrakasa is still going to list your property on Airbnb. It's not like, I mean, they have their own thing, but they're still going to.
They'll list it everywhere.
They're still going to list it on Airbnb. Yeah. They're just saying like they'll manage it for you. They'll handle the cleaning and all that. That's basically how their stuff works. But I don't know if you wanted to hop in, Risa, but earlier there's something I wanted to mention too about the co-host stuff. So a lot of people, one thing a lot of people don't factor in is the opportunity cost for their time. And maybe I'm blessed and cursed at the same time to be in a position where I have to think about my time that way, where it's, for me, yeah, I'm paying the co-host though. Portion of my profits to manage stuff, but what I'm thinking about is all the time that it frees up for me to go and chase money in other ways. And a lot of people don't factor that in on a lot of the time. Apart from peace of mind and all that, sometimes, and I think I was watching this on this video podcast too, or some kind of video on Instagram. Sometimes you need to hire somebody to free yourself up to actually go make more money. The penny wise pound foolish approach doesn't always, I mean, it's not saying be careless and go hire somebody day one, but sometimes to get to the next level, you need to hire somebody to replace
the first type of leverage, labor leverage.
Yeah, in that business. Leverage. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I think I for 100% agree. I feel like, you know, every successful millionaire, billionaire, business owner, they use leverage. They use other people to multiply themselves. Mm-hmm. That's really how you grow, and that's really how you build wealth. You cannot do it all. You're not good at it all. No one is. So to try to do everything, you're going to do everything at a mediocre level, and you're going to be burnt out.
Because you only have 24 hours in a day. So
exactly. You only have 24 hours a day and you don't get them back. That's the thing. People say time is money. No, it's really not. Time is infinitely more valuable than money. You do not get time back.
I love that.
You do not get time back. And so we can always make more money, but we cannot make more time, period. And so if I got to pay a little bit more, but I have my time, sign me up for that thing. Because so many people have it wrong when they're coming into the business world. They want to be a jack of all trades and do everything in their business. And it's like, you just gave yourself a job. You didn't, this is a job, a very tiring job too.
I know, right?
And it's it goes back to your mindset. Like you really have to shift your mindset to that of a business owner, of a CEO, and stepping into that role means you're going to be paying to outsource some things, period, at the end of the day. And, you know, too many people, I think it's because, you know, people as a society, like we are not really trained to be entrepreneurs. We're trained to be employees. And so making that shift from.
Put that on a t-shirt.
I mean, it's true. It's true.
Like, put that on a t-shirt. School,
you know, we go.
That is so true.
College and everything, and like it's all occupation based. You know, you even said it yourself when you quit your job. It's like, well, what do I do now? We identify with our occupation so much that we forget that we're actually very powerful beings, that we can create whatever we want. We can create our own wealth. And again, it comes back to your mindset. Like you have to be in that that shift in order to understand how important it is to protect your time. And so Kennedy, back to what you were saying, you don't know if it's a blessing or a curse. I think it's a blessing that because you're still working, you have to protect your time. Like you have to. And so you're putting things in place that sometimes it takes people years to put that stuff in place, and only after they've exhausted themselves. Case in point right here. Like I waited way too long to start outsourcing. I didn't think I could afford it. But on the flip side, like I couldn't afford what I was doing either. I couldn't afford, you know, spending 20 hours a day in my business either. Like that's way more expensive than $10 an hour for somebody to take a bunch of stuff off of my plate. So, I consider that a blessing for sure. That you're forced to kind of do that right up front, you know, already thinking about outsourcing, already making room for, you know, a percentage to go to somebody. I think it's a really smart way to go.
Yeah, to throw in a couple of things here, there are a couple of things I want to make sure we fit in before we have to close.
Are we hitting on time?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, there's no hard limit. It's all good content so far. I don't think I can cut anything we've said so far. So. But yeah, but going forward in the future, like one of my goals is to create small hubs instead of isolated properties. Like for instance, if something else came up in Cincinnati and it was in a good location, I would definitely snap that up because one of the things I learned from Sean, and I guess this is in a sense it's kind of business 101, mm-hmm. is when you have economies of scale, you're able to your costs go down essentially. So it's a lot cheaper for me to have Nikita manage 4 units in the same place than to have one Nikita in Cincinnati, one Nikita in Titusville, one Nikita in Dallas, one in Jacksonville. Yeah. So I want to start creating smaller hubs of 3-4 properties instead of 1-1-1-1 in each location.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good idea.
Yeah. Because of my proximity, of course, and bias, Dallas would be, you know, one of those locations for sure. So that's something down the line that I definitely have in mind. I think that's something people should think about too when you're trying to get started and looking for properties.
Yeah.
It definitely pays not just for cleaning, although Nikita does both, but if you're considering cleaning and if you're considering co-hosts for your co-host agreement, it's probably not going to be too different. But Sean has an entire video where he talks about paying cleaners and it's a masterclass. Sean's videos are like,
masterclass. It's a lot of value.
Yeah, he describes the different models you can use on how, if you have enough properties, you can even decide not to pay cleaners per cleaning or per property and just pay them like an hourly or even pay them salaries and just create schedules for them to clean. Like he has,
it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, that gives you more power to work with. But one topic I wanted to touch on is lately there's been a lot of, let me not say a lot, but there's been this wave lately of people going back to the conversation of which one really makes more sense. Does it really make sense to still rent Airbnbs because supposedly they're getting so expensive? And I had this conversation with somebody that brought it up and I was like, what do you mean they're getting too expensive? I mean, I showed her some examples of, hey, I stayed at this place in Austin just 2 weeks ago. Look at the price. The cleaning fee was just like $60 or something. All they asked is to help us keep our cleaning fee down. Please, when you're done, please put the towels in the washer. That was it. And she was like, "Well, why should I have to do that?" And it's and it's like people kind of got used to a certain idea with Airbnbs. And the second experience that got me thinking about it is, I was in Baltimore a couple of months ago. And my aunt invited me to this conference. Funny enough, it was about the insurance thing. That was when she was first getting me into it. And she booked this hotel. So I didn't pick the hotel. She picked the hotel and everything. So it turns out that our flight was delayed or something. We ended up getting to Baltimore around like 11 p.m. So I got to the hotel right around like just a few minutes past midnight, thereabouts. And the guy at the front desk was like, let me see if the room is still available. I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Let me see if the room is still available. He was like, don't you know when you go to hotels, if you don't check in by midnight, they might give the room away or something. I was like, wow, are you serious? And I was like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was like, I've checked into hotels that late, but I've never heard that before. And I was like, yeah,
what maybe that's why. Reservation then? Do they just cancel it?
I don't know. I didn't see it canceled.
I heard of it before. It's a thing.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, it is. So I said to him, I mean, and I guess that's why we keep taking money from you guys.
Yeah.
That's why we keep making money off you guys. And there's this belief that people like him and my friend I was talking, they have this belief, almost like a superiority complex, that hotels are just necessarily better. And I maybe it's just because of what I prefer, my own bias, not just because I'm a host, but I've always preferred Airbnbs because I feel more at home and, you know, I can actually bring food back, keep it in the fridge, and microwave it the next day and not have to you know, but I could never really understand that. What's your take on that new belief that's happened? I think for some people, they're not necessarily saying that hotels are better. Some people are saying the reason why I was getting Airbnbs was because they were cheaper and now they're not anymore. Yeah. Right. That's what some people are saying. What do you think about that?
On the one hand, I do agree that Airbnb and their fees have become kind of ridiculous. And they're pretty much on par with hotels as far as...
Exactly. I was going to say that.
But no matter how many people gripe about Airbnb on Twitter, there will always be a place for Airbnb, period. Because everybody doesn't want to live out of a hotel room. If I have to be in town for a conference or something and I got to stay for a week, I want to stay in a nice apartment where I can stretch my legs and cook a meal and, you know, not have housekeeping, you know, coming in and switching around my stuff every day. And some people don't like all that. They want that private home experience. And so there's always going to be a market for Airbnb and Airbnb like properties. I don't care how many people complain about it. Like, they have their preference and these people over here will have their preference. Like, I don't think that it's ever going to go away. Just like hotels have never gone away. Even with the rise of Airbnb, hotels are still enjoying plenty of guests, right? Like, they may be complaining about the loss of market share, but hotels are booming. They will always be booming. There will always be a need for hotels. There will always be a need for short-term rentals. That's my take.
Yeah.
You know, people, they talk about the fees. They talk about hosts that, you know, have a laundry list of chores for you to do. But that's not what kind of host I am. So it doesn't bother me. Like, yeah. I don't like those hosts either. Like, I wouldn't stay at a place like that if I had to do 10 chores before I check out. Like, yeah. I don't like that either. So I'm not that kind of host. And so, hey, if it doesn't apply, let it fly. It doesn't apply to me. So. That doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I kind of like when people talk about Airbnb on Twitter. Like, I don't know if you saw, it was just recently, like 2 weeks ago, they just were going in on Airbnb on Twitter.
Oh, really?
News. Everybody was talking about it. And a lot of folks start panicking off of a Twitter thread. Like, well, maybe now's not a good time to start my Airbnb, and people are starting to change their opinions about it. And I'm like, listen, if a Twitter thread is going to make you rethink your entire business plan, you are not cut out for this business, period. Like, no, you can't let stuff like that deter you from an entire goal that you had set forth. People are going to have their opinions.
Period. Yeah.
But, you know, look at the numbers. Look at how many there are. Look at how huge Airbnb has become. Do y'all really think it's going to go anywhere anytime soon? I don't think so. Now, it may change. You know what I mean? Like, that's certainly what's going on. They're changing the algorithm. They're changing their policies. You know, they're changing things. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it's here to stay.
I agree completely.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the market it keeps it in the news. It's still something that's talked about heavily, and I'm okay with that. Like, it's going to be controversial. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, and I'm okay with that. I don't want it to be everybody's cup of tea. the more people that are scared away, the more market share for us.
Yeah, so, it's a competitive mode almost.
Yes, it has become quite competitive. That doesn't bother me either, because a lot of the people that are entering Airbnb will be exiting Airbnb just as quickly because they don't know what they're doing. They don't have systems. They don't have, you know, they think it's just a trendy money play thing that they can just get into, and they will quickly see that that's not the case and that you really have to be serious. They come and they go.
Yeah. I completely agree. And one thought that I usually have on this issue, apart from what you mentioned, like, you literally get to pick your own Airbnb. So I don't like hosts like that either. So whenever I go, when I'm looking for Airbnbs, I'm looking at the rules. Oh, you're saying I have to, you know, wash the sheets and everything right now. Okay, let me look for the next person. Oh, right. Your cleaning fee is $150. Okay, no. Let me look for the next person. So I never really understand when people literally pick the Airbnb themselves and then complain about the very rules that they agreed
right.
to.
Right. Like you can read them. Really... You can read them. They're right there before you put a dime on it. You can read everything. And you have the power. And you don't have that same kind of power at a hotel. I mean, exactly. You can make requests. You can say, hey, I need accessibility or I need a corner room or whatever. But you don't know what if you're actually going to get that.
Personally, I've always been a hotel. I'm still a hotel guy. I can't lie.
I like hotels too.
I like hotels too sometimes. Yeah.
But it's going to depend on the trip, the nature of the trip, all of that. Exactly. If I'm going to Vegas on a girl's trip, we're getting a hotel, period.
Exactly.
But, you know, if I'm going somewhere, like I said, for a work thing or for a family thing, and I'm going to be there for an extended period of time, I'm definitely going to want to stay in a place that feels like home.
That's exactly how I feel about it. And one thing I like to say is, apart from resorts or something like that, a good Airbnb is better than a hotel, in my opinion.
I agree.
And, like, all the things you want out of your hotel, like, okay, for you, what's the best thing that a hotel offers you? If you had to say.
The cleaning. I like the fact that I can go out and.
Okay, so you like the daily cleaning.
I like the daily cleaning.
Okay.
I like the reception service. Mm.
Okay.
I just feel bougie when I walk in and then there's a reception.
Okay, I don't know, fair man. Enough.
I get that.
That's like a concierge
service.
If I wanted to be at home, I would have been at home. But like,
that's a different experience, I guess. I don't like the daily cleanings. I tell them not to, unless I'm staying longer than maybe two. If I'm staying anything more than 2-3 nights, then I'll get the cleaning. Otherwise, I don't even, like she said, I don't know. Maybe it's an OCD thing. I don't want them coming in and moving my shoes from work. I kept my shoes there for a reason. Yeah. So maybe for me, that doesn't add much. But the way I see it is, like, the best Airbnb hosts offer that kind of hospitality. It really is a hospitality business.
It is.
And some hosts don't realize it, I think. And they miss out on that aspect of it. So the best hosts offer those kind of services. I mean, I'm always thinking of, okay, how can I make this person feel more comfortable? Like, just you want to could make you, your could, host feel like, what's that?
Could you add breakfast options?
Some Airbnbs do that. Some really? Airbnbs do that. Yeah, some do that. It depends on what you want to offer. Like when I started out the townhouse,
cooks in the morning.
Some do that. Some do that. Yeah.
There are hosts that are making tons of extra money by offering that.
Some hosts will even come, like, teach you a yoga class or something or do some other experience.
Wow. I've had somebody do a paint and sip in one of my Airbnbs where, like, they were charging people $40.
Wow.
Baby showers, like, cooking classes, all of that. Yes.
Nah. I need to get into
this. Yeah, so there's a lot. There's a lot you can do with it.
Because if you already have the guests coming into town, they're already kind of in that spending frame of mind. They're, you know, they're coming on vacation or whatever. If you can offer them an experience that, you know, they don't have to go and search for, you're bringing it to them, they're a lot more likely to just go ahead and they've already spent money with you. So, you know, you can partner with local people in your area, a local chef or a masseuse or whoever, and y'all can split, you know, the little profit. But people are making a ton of extra money because people realize that it's gotten competitive so that, you know, that you can't expect, you know, a cash cow from just your bookings necessarily anymore. So you have to do something to stand out. And that's what a lot of people are doing. They're offering services, they're offering classes, they're offering, you know, experiences on top of their booking, and they're making a lot of extra money for that.
One idea that comes to mind is like if you live in like a tourist heavy area, you could potentially offer tour guide services too.
Some people do that. This is kind of rare, but some hosts will even, they'll have a car on location. And when you rent the unit, you get the car with the unit.
Yeah. Like a lot of people, they don't even necessarily advertise it, but it'll be parked at the Airbnb with like a QR code in the window. And so if people see that, they can just scan the QR code in order to rent the car. it's already right there. So you're doing all that work for them. They don't have to go and rent a car. It's almost like it's tempting. It's like, it's right here and we're here. Instead of Ubering, let's just use this car. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's genius. It's genius. And like, I've been telling myself to get on Turo just to do this, just to get a better experience for my guests. Like, hey, if you need it, right here. But yeah, it's a lot of different creative ways to make more money with Airbnb for sure. That's what
there's a spectrum. Yeah, there's a spectrum on both Airbnbs and hotels. So, I mean, but comparing all these things we just said, I've stayed at Hyatt in Miami before, and there's one bottle of water. I think there's one or two bottles of water in the room. I think we were there for three, four days. And once you're done with those two bottles of water, if you want more water, you have to pay for it.
Damn.
And that's the kind of service you get at hotels sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I don't think any sensible Airbnb host would do that to you. No. I don't think.
No. So at this like point, it's like standard to have water, coffee, creamer, like stuff to make a whole entire cup of coffee. Some people have like refreshment, like breakfast things, like granola bars and like the whole thing.
I don't think it's the same in London. I think London Airbnbs are a bit more stingy.
Really? That's disappointing.
Because housing is such a big... And because throughout this conversation, I've been thinking of how like I could apply it to the UK market. Mm-hmm. And like the housing dynamic in the UK is so much more... I think it's so much more different to the US. Because first of all, I'm in London, and if you know about London, it's a congested area. Like, so to find a house, to find a unit that is available, that, that and it's not exorbitant, it's pricey. It's pricey as hell. So, but even when you manage to find, because they are so scarce, I don't think hosts feel like, and this is just from a consumer perspective, but I think the hosts feel like you're privileged to even come to my, to even find my apartment. So it's more like the hosts have the power here more than the consumers. So I think in London is a very, 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 very different market.
But here's like the Airbnb's, thing, dude. Yeah, go on, dude. I thought you finished.
Airbnbs and hotels are basically the same price here.
Okay.
Wow. In fact, hotels are cheaper because they have economies of scale.
So
hotels are basically cheaper than Airbnbs if you're staying for like a night or two.
But the difference there is if you have a market of hosts who all think you're privileged to find their apartment, the one or two hosts who don't behave that way, they have an advantage.
Yeah, sometimes you're right.
People might even pay more to stay with those people because
but that's in the long run,
it
though.
Feels different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that
there's always a way to stand out in your market.
You'll see benefits in the long run from being that kind of host here, actually. Now that I think about it. Well, yeah, that's Chris.
I bet.
This has been a very interesting
debate over there. I'm sure of it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. If you can find a way, if you have the capital to get a place, a good place, a good apartment, and you can find a way to give top-notch service, I'm confident you can make a lot of money. Because London is one of those towns that people are always looking for Airbnbs throughout the year. Like there's no downtime in London. There's always something happening. So I mean, it's not as vibrant as it used to be years ago. I mean, I'm sure you've heard about the pound dropping and us changing prime ministers every 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So like the economy is not as vibrant as it used to be, but like still London.
Yeah, it sounds like America to me. So dollar is basically worthless right now. So
I mean, everywhere is shit now. But like. I'm sure, like, if you can work around it, which I plan on doing after this conversation, if you can work around it, there's money to be made here, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Might be getting an apartment near the Emirates Stadium or.
Yeah, exactly. I live right beside Tottenham Stadium. So
there you go. I mean, it's unfortunate, but. You can make money there.
Next to a stadium? Hell yeah.
I still
that was an inside joke.
Oh. Damn.
Yeah, but I'm excited.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
It's tons of opportunity still. Like, I don't care what nobody says. Like, there's always going to be opportunity in this industry, but you have to go and get it. You have to be a go-getter. You have to be an action taker. You have to be a doer, and you have to be creative. You know, you can't get into it thinking that you're going to do this cookie cutter thing and, you know, just throw something up there without any thought or any strategy. That's the one thing that I would say gives it a bad name, because a lot of people just jump in thinking it's going to be an automatic, like, money train. And it's, you know, maybe 4 years ago, but not this year. Not, you know what I mean? Like, it's just too competitive for you to come into it. Casually.
It's so crazy because like 3-4 years ago I saw an ad for Airbnb arbitrage. Like, and in the ad,
do they call it arbitrage in London?
Yes, arbitrage is used everywhere.
Is what it's called. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But like I saw an ad for it, and in the ad, what the guy basically did was like, imagine if you rented a place, $2,000, and then you got people to pay $100 every night for 30 days. So that's 100 times 30, basically. So that's 3,000. So you made 1K profit. And I was like, shit, no business can be that simple. This must be a scam.
I know. This is not that simple. But that and is the basic, you know, that's the basic.
And
that's
3 years later, I know people that have actually done this. And I skipped ad. So my skip ad is basically
it's
basically
real.
Coming back to bite me in the face. So I'm glad. It's crazy because sometimes you hear about this business opportunity and I like, this is sounds too good to be true.
Yeah.
But then, but it's a business in any sense. It's a hospitality business.
Definitely a business. Yeah.
Sometimes people lose out on the human touch of it. There was this guy one day, like he made an inquiry. I can't remember what he was asking. He was saying something about, I can't remember what he was asking, but I basically talked to him about it and I was like, okay, you know what? I'll even throw in like 10% off or something. He was like, oh, wow, thank you. Okay. And he booked. And it was something he said that stuck with me. He was like, oh, wow, like he really appreciated the hospitality that people don't really do that anymore like they used to, basically.
Yeah.
Because he was
everything's
expecting
so robotic,
like
no.
He was expecting he would make an inquiry and somebody would give him some canned response and maybe pre-approve or something. So he really appreciated, you know, the human touch to it.
Yeah.
Which is something that's left out a lot today, even in hotels.
I was just going to say, that's another thing that Airbnb has on hotels is that human touch and that more personal interaction between you and another human in order to rent a space versus you just putting a credit card somewhere on the internet and there's a room for you somewhere that you don't have no idea what it looks like, or you gotta check into it, and it's a different experience.
We're coming up in an hour and a half here, and I'm sure it's getting pretty late in London for Tony.
I know, right?
So Risa, I want to give you an opportunity for a solid plug. If somebody wanted to get started in your mentorship program today, How did they do it? What are the steps? What are the expectations?
Yes. What are they getting out of it? The thing about my mentorship is I'm very picky about who I take on, only because I guarantee that we're going to find your place within that 8 weeks that we work together. So I really can only take people that are ready. You're ready to invest. You've got your coins together for your deposit, your first month rent, your furniture, you're ready to go. So it's 8 weeks one-on-one working with me. It's a 5K investment. And like I said, there's no payment plans, no nothing like that, because you have to be ready to go. I'm definitely going to find your unit for you. You just got to stick with me. And I say 8 weeks, but Kennedy, you know this. I don't let my clients go. We just kind of, you know, it's a network. It's, you know, your network is your net worth. And every client that I find a unit for, they are now a successful host, you know, that I know. Why would I stop talking to you after 8 weeks, right? Like, now you're part of my network. And so as I get new properties, I'm going to keep all of my mentees in mind. Speaking of, Kennedy, you said that you were still looking for properties in the area in Cincinnati. I have two
Okay.
I can send you right across the river in Covington, Kentucky.
Okay.
I live in Covington.
I'm so jealous.
Renovated. But you have to move fast on those. So we'll talk after this.
All right.
But hit me up on IG, Risa the Superhost. Send me a DM and we'll hop on a phone call. I like to get to know my people before we work together. I got to make sure that it feels good for me. It feels good for you. And then we can go get the money together. Like I want people to get into this industry and really start doing it. You know, it's not just going to be 8 weeks of a course or consuming some material and not ever really implementing. I'm all about the implementation, all about getting that property and getting your feet wet in the industry. That's it.
Okay,
so perfect. If you are looking to get started and you definitely have problems getting a property, then I think that I'm the mentor for you because we're going to make sure that you get into one.
I endorse this message.
Yes.
So that's Risa the Superhost.
I'll put your stuff in the show notes.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'll put all that stuff in
all
there.
Right, good then.
And guys, Tony has also been doing a lot of, I think you're starting your live stream campaign on Chief of Lagos. I'll put that in the description as well. Tony, you want to say a few words before we close out?
Thanks, Kennedy. This was really insightful. It's different from our usual screaming matches that we have over the podcast. Today, we actually learned something. So, feel free to follow me on my YouTube channel. I'm a content creator in the Afrobeat space in London, nightlife. Chief of Lagos on Instagram, on YouTube. I've started my live streams. Yes, I'm reacting to the latest gist topics, trending topics, music. So follow me on my YouTube. Every Friday, 10 p.m., we do live streams. Kennedy's going to be a guest one of these days. So I can catch him. Look forward to being on the show again.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? You might be able to get an Airbnb, maybe not even necessarily in London, maybe in the US. That might be something to look into. I didn't
know laws against that.
No.
Not necessarily. No, no.
You know, we didn't even touch on this. Listen, I have a client in Canada who I found two units in Atlanta for. It can be done across country lines. Okay. It can.
Okay, then.
Absolutely.
Okay, then we'll talk about this. We'll talk about this over the course.
And here's the thing that you might not have thought of. Maybe some people don't think about me being, I don't know how far away Cincinnati is from you. It's probably at least a 3-hour flight. Me being a 3-hour flight away, you being a 6-hour flight, there's really no difference. I'm not there. You're not there. There's practically no difference. I'm not going to hop on a flight to go there when a guest has a problem. So there's practically no difference, really. Yeah. But yeah, something to look into, something to talk about.
All right. Then.
But yeah.
I mean, the only complication there would just be, you know, the money exchange and obviously, you know, paying every month and things like that. But all those things can be worked out, you know, like that's.
I mean, if I have an emergency, Kennedy can quickly go to my space.
That's what your co-host is for. That's what your co-host is for.
Exactly. You get your co-host on.
That's what they're for.
I'll look into it.
All right.
For sure. I'm excited. So don't. No worries. Okay. You'll hear from me soon.
All right. I appreciate you guys hopping on. Thanks for all the nuggets, Risa. Your podcast natural. Have you been on a podcast before?
I have never been on a podcast. Like, this really? Is amazing. And I love podcasts too. Like, I listen to like probably 12 podcasts regularly. So I am delighted to be on this right now.
You're a natural, for real.
Yeah, you're a natural.
Thank you.
It's like a glove.
Thank you.
I think it's because of like your speaking and mentorship stuff. So like everything just flows.
Thank you. I've actually been thinking about starting one of my own. I just haven't pulled the trigger on it.
You should.
Thank you.
Yeah, like Tony was saying, I was on Buzzsprout reading about how to start a podcast for weeks.
Yeah.
And something happened. It was an event that just kind of triggered me to finally stop thinking and do it.
Just do it.
But otherwise, I would have been stuck in that mode for God knows how long.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's a real affliction that analysis paralysis will keep you stuck for months and years.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody. If you listened all the way to this point, you're real. I mean, I'm sure you did. Like, this is value. This is free. This is free value. This isn't free us game. Talking about whiskey and Umberto Boy. This is free value. This is free value free here. Yeah, but thanks, guys, for sticking along this far. Thanks, Tony and Risa, for staying up. Tony's a real one, staying up to 2 a.m. again.
Yeah, you are.
3 a.m.
for
you. Yeah, when I have work
thanks
in the morning.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Thank you.
Of course, right, of course. Then. Well, thanks, guys, for staying with us. Don't forget to share, subscribe to the channel. If you were following the channel before, we recently had a little hiccup, so you might have to follow again just so you get all the updates. We'll see you guys next time.